Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Motormouth podcast. This week we sat down with Jake Dennis, the season 9 Formula E world champion, no less. We spoke to him about his championship winning year, looking ahead to season 10, all the races that entails, what his aspirations are for the upcoming season, what he thinks he can achieve. Can he become a world champion all over again? He feels less pressure coming into season 10, which is interesting. I kind of felt like, you know, you've got a lot to live up to. It's going to be more pressure. But for him, he felt like the pressure was off. He's got his championship under his belt and he can strut into the paddock knowing he's the world champion with the pressure off his shoulders. Really, really fun chatting with Jake. Thanks so much to him and his team for giving us the time. Really hope you enjoy this one. And I was joined by Tom McCluskey, co-hosting Tomo F1. Great to have Tom back on the show. But with no further ado, let's get on with it. Here we are. This is our interview with Formula E world champion, Jake Dennis.
So Jake, your stats in Formula E are pretty incredible, mate. We've got not just Formula E, by the way, as well. 28 wins, 85 podiums, 26 poles, 26 fastest laps, and a podium percentage of 29.3%. Which is not bad, right? Did you know these stats? You've got to be pretty happy with your body work so far. And I did remember that all the... I definitely don't have that noted down, Jake.
Yeah, I can see that. Straight off the dome. Yeah, obviously the stats so far have been pretty good in Formula E. It's like a love affair in Formula E. Sometimes you do really well, sometimes you do really bad. And my first season, even though it ended quite well, the start was pretty rough. But then, nevertheless, it sort of snowballed from there. And then it's been fairy tale this year, incredible season, and just been enjoying it as much as possibly can while we've got such a good powertrain. You're only as good as your equipment, so when you've got a good donkey behind you, you generally try and go with it as long as you can. And looking forward to this year or next season coming up, because we should be competitive again.
Now, before we come on to being world champ and looking ahead to next year, where did this passion for racing come from originally? Was it in the family? What got you into it?
Yeah, it was in the family a little bit. My dad used to race before I did, nothing competitive or anything like that. He was just working like a normal 9-to-5 job. And then just at the weekends, we'd go watch him race terribly. And then just when I started, when I was 8, I gave it a crack. I got an older sister as well, and we used to go together. And I used to hate it. I used to hate the competitive side of it. I didn't enjoy the speed or anything like that, even though we weren't even going fast. And then so I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I'll park it and just continue playing football. And then I gave it another crack when I was 9, and then just sort of fell in love with it. And it sort of just progressed from there. But it wasn't just initially just jump in and think this is the thing for me. It was definitely a bit more of a grind at the start. And then when I was 9, it was then like, okay, this is enjoyable. But I didn't really know what motorsport was. Like, all I ever knew was just watching my dad. I didn't grow up watching Formula 1 on TV. I didn't know what Formula 1 was really at 9 years old. I didn't know who Michael Schumacher was. I didn't know who Ayrton Senna was. So it wasn't like I want to be these guys from the age of birth. Like, it wasn't like that at all. So for me, it was just such a small little family bit of fun on the weekends. And then it sort of progressed more and more as I got a bit better. And then turned serious when I was 12, when I got sponsored.
When you mentioned football there, so that was obviously a bit of a passion when you were younger. I've got to ask, who do you follow?
I'm originally a Leicester boy. So I'm originally from Leicester. I wasn't so much of a football hooligan when we won the league. And I was living in Leicester at the time, and all my mates were going absolutely mental when we won it. And I was like, why is the city going absolutely crazy? And then as I started learning a bit more about football and started getting into it, I was like, how on earth did Leicester win the Premier League? Yeah. Like, no wonder we went absolutely crazy. Yeah, I'm still not massively into it. I enjoy more of the players, to be honest. Like like Jack Grealish or Foden, like Madders and stuff like that. I enjoy watching them. But Leicester, obviously, we're out of the league at the moment, but hopefully we'll come back up.
Interesting. Do you think, like, obviously, as a sports person yourself, is that, I guess it must be, you look at a football player or any sports person for that matter, and there's a degree of somewhat understanding because you're both kind of at the top of your games relative to me and Tim, who are simpletons. Maybe we're an equivalent in the podcast space.
Fair comment.
Maybe.
The biggest thing is just like their personalities. I feel like Grealish, Foden, and Madders, like, they still enjoy their outside life. And then you get some players who are just so like by the book, and you get that in motorsport really badly as well. Probably worse, to be honest, because you're not showered in limelight. Whereas someone like Grealish still has a lot of fun, and I generally always try and enjoy my motorsport as much as I possibly can. So it's like a combination. I see myself in them and enjoying what they do. They're obviously good at it, and enjoy watching them play football. But yeah, I'm not one for being completely like strict the whole time. It's mentally and physically draining. Like, I just deteriorate rapidly if I'm like by the book every second of the day.
I think one thing that the football players are starting to get quite good at is the post-match interviews. They feel less scripted and less media trained now. Like people like you mentioned, like Grealish and others, even Haaland, they seem like they actually say what they feel. I think motorsport is probably still guilty of having a very sort of media trained way, especially in Formula One. Some of the drivers don't always say what they're feeling. What are you like in front of a camera? Do you tend to just wear your heart on your sleeve, or is there an element of, not hiding things necessarily, but watching what you say?
I mean, I've got in trouble a fair few times this year with my media team, so I would very much say I wear my heart on my sleeve and say what I'm feeling. But I mean, I'm not going to change for anyone. Like, it's who I am, and if there's a certain situation, then yeah, sure, I'll probably force myself to say something for the correct time if it's that serious. But if it's little things here and there, like, yeah, sure enough, I'm just going to mention what I feel like is right. And it is what it is. Like, it's your personality what comes across at the end of the day. And I think even though it got me in a bit of trouble with the team, the outside public were like, of course, it's just competition, and that's bound to happen. So I don't have no regrets over it.
And there's so many angles and perspectives and eyeballs on you as Formula E champion. It's like, if you were to kind of try and cultivate this brand friendly image, like, that would just be exhausting to sustain. Surely, you just, like, if you just be yourself, then you can just crack on every day, and you don't have to think about, oh, I've got to be Jake Dennis for the cameras today. Like, that would just be crazy, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you've just got to have a balance, and I think you've got to pick your battles with your team. They understand me more and more now that they can't just shove me in front of a camera like day in, day out and expect me to say the same thing over and over again. So I think they understand me better over the past 3 years of how I am as a person, and I'll definitely respect them in certain situations that, I'll pick my battles, like, this I don't want to do, that I'll do. And it's just part of it. And I think Formula One, football, like, these real big sports is a lot more tedious and probably a lot, and definitely a lot worse than what I have it. That's one of the things I love about Formula E. I love, like, the side of the professionalism, the competitiveness, how professional it is. But then also just the side that you still have a bit of a life. very much so. Like, you finish 27th of July, so you've got August, September, October really out in the sun somewhere. Whereas Formula One, you know, it's pretty intense. You're very much away from home the whole time. And it's not always glamorous what everyone thinks it is. In terms of Formula E, Formula One, like all this travel, it is intense. And the locations aren't always amazing. But it's part of the job. You're there to do a job. And you enjoy the part when you're actually sat in the car driving the track. Whereas everything else can be a little bit repetitive. You know, no one enjoys catching a 17-hour flight to location. So, yeah, it's part of the game. But definitely not always as glamorous what everyone thinks it is.
Now, you were in GT racing and remained in GT racing for a number of years. Things like Bathurst 12 Hours, DTM, Blancpain, ELMS and LMP2 and so on. How and why did the switch to Formula E come about? Tell us about that.
Oh, it was a strange one, but it's quite a good story. So yeah, I was racing with Aston Martin at the time for GTs. I was racing with Audi before that, but my sort of professional career really started when I joined Aston Martin. And then I used to race for a team called Arda Motorsport in 2016, who had an employee then working at BMW in 2021. And he messaged sort of, not my manager, but just a really good friend of mine, and was like, there's an opportunity coming about that Alexander Sims is leaving BMW. He says, I'll put your name forward and see what comes from it. And I didn't think anything of it at that time. And it was COVID, and so it was 2020 by this point. I wasn't even racing. I was just sort of just sat on the sidelines and twiddling my thumbs, really. I got hit pretty hard with it because my team just stopped entirely. So I was like, okay, I'm not exactly going to go from a couch to a Formula E drive in the space of like 2 months. But ended up happening. So yeah, my friend one of my friends said there's an opening. We had a simulator day come from it, and I'm pretty good on simulators, to be fair. Like, it's one of my knacks. I'm quite good at it. I do it for Red Bull for the past like 5 years now, and there's definitely an art to it. Some people are very bad on simulators but very good in real life, and vice versa. You know, these sim pros which now get paid for it are mind-blowingly fast, but to put them in a real car, it's very different. But I managed to get a pretty good balance. I did the sim and yeah, sort of smashed that and did well. So then we're like, right, okay, we'll give you a one-day test in Vallelunga or somewhere, or wherever it was, Verano. And I was up against Max Gunther, who was their number one driver. He drove the first day, I drove the second, and yeah, did very well. Was competitive straight away, clicked with the team. There was a few English guys which I knew there, so the relationship was already quite good. And then went away. But obviously, at this point, DTM had just finished. So they had six DTM drivers also trying to get this seat. And they were all BMW drivers. So they had six BMW drivers who they had to fill a contract for. And then one Aston Martin guy just on out in the plume of smoke, just like, who's this guy? And I was like, I've got no chance politically. Like, this is never going to work. And then there was a guy called Mike Cragg who was like the boss. And he said, we're not going to put you in for the final test. We're going to put Sheldon van der Linde in. And that was the final test before Valencia, like pre-season. And I was like, that's it then. Like, I did a good job, but it just politically didn't quite work out. I was like, yeah, fair. And then about 2 weeks before Valencia pre-season, they were like, yeah, you're going to be driving this for next season. You're going to get the seat. So I was like, wow, like, didn't expect that at all. Full credit to Mike Crack, who went completely like away from probably what he should have done and put just one of the ETM drivers in who could have done easily like a good job. But yeah, he sort of bit the bullet with it and yeah, put me in. So yeah, left Aston Martin, joined BMW with Formula E, and yeah, sort of never looked back. But it was, yeah, treading on a few people's toes for sure, especially like the guys I'm friends with now. You know, I'm friends with all these BMW guys, so I still race for them now. So it's but yeah, I definitely stole their seat. And yeah, it's part of it, I guess. It's part of the game.
Got to look after yourself, haven't you? Look, when you first jumped into that Formula E car, what was that experience like? Because, you know, the electric powertrain, the, I guess, kind of lack of aero, but then maybe more aero relative to the GTs you've been in. Like, what was the most similar racing experience you'd had or driving experience you'd had before that? Or was that a completely kind of foreign racing experience that you had to adapt to really quickly?
Yeah, honestly, completely foreign. I'd never experienced anything like it before. The biggest thing when I first jumped in, as I forgot to put my earplugs in because all I could hear was noise, like wind noise. And you don't hear the engine, and you just hear like your head out the window on the motorway. That's what generally Formula E sounds like when you're driving. And just how smooth it is. Like in general motorsport in your career, you're driving kartings which rattle and bounce around everywhere. Then you move into Formula 4, Formula 3, and all you hear is the engine, the gearbox. And then you move into Formula E, and it's like silent as a whistle. There's no vibrations, and all you can hear is the curbs and like the tire lockup. So it's very peculiar sound, and you lose a lot of clues of like how the car's behaving and stuff like that. So you have to generate new ones. So that was really the biggest thing, was the sound. And then just the way you hit the brake pedal is very different in Formula E compared to any sort of junior category you grow up doing. But that's just technique and repetitiveness, and you'll get better at it. And something what I struggled with at the start of my Formula E career. It's very different. But now when I jump into something else, like that feels different to me. And then jumping back into Formula E feels like home. I still do my GT stuff with BMW now. I can still link with them. So I can still swap between the two. It just takes a bit of time. It takes like a run or two, and then you're sort of back into it.
Do you drive an EV at home?
I do not.
Oh, Jake.
I got an M3 parked out on the drive.
Oh, that's fair enough.
Yeah, that's one of the perks. They give you a new car every 6 months. Oh. So I've just moved out of London, though, and I'm getting an X3M delivered. I'm turning into a bit more of a dad, and just, I've not got a kid, but I'm turning into like a dad, bigger car and more comfortable. And
it's your age, mate. I mean, you know, you're knocking on 30. It's time to get a bigger car. M3. Yeah, prepare for the impending babies. It's all going to come very quickly.
That's the last thing I need right now.
Now you've won the championship in your third year, right? In Formula E, season 8 mm-hmm. wasn't exactly a bad year for you. You had a win, 4 podiums, 126 points, finished 6th in the standings. Heading into season 9, what were your expectations? Did you realistically think I'm going to be world champion this year?
No, not at all. So we obviously signed with Porsche with Andretti, so the partnership was created. And, you know, no one really knew anything about these Formula E cars. Obviously, it was Gen 3, so it was new for everyone. I just did one day testing, and it went all right. But, you know, you have no reference. You're just driving around against yourself and the clock. But it felt okay. And then we went to the Valencia pre-season testing, and we got blown out of the water by literally everyone apart from, like, one team. And we were, like, literally a second off the pace every single lap, every single run. And I was like, it's going to be one of those, like, it's going to be one of those years. It's going to be the next, like, and even like next year, I was thinking, like, you can't change anything to the car. So I was like, 2024 is already going to be bad. So I was like, well, there's nothing I can do now. I'm contracted. It is what it is. We'll try and make the best of it. Did 3 days of driving around in like P18 for the whole, like all of us, me, Da Costa, Lotterer and Pascal. And then I was like, right, I'm going skiing. And I never ski because I'm just like, it's too high risk. Like, and I was like, well, if I break a leg, break a wrist, like, I'm not going to miss any points. So I'm off skiing. Had like, yeah, an amazing sort of New Year's trip in, where did I go? Somewhere in France. And then I was like, right, let's just get Mexico out of the way and just hit it with, and see how we get on. And then we ended up qualifying second and winning the race by 8 seconds. It was like, what the hell? What's just happened here? Like, it was, and we hadn't even changed that much. Like, we changed a bit of things with the software, but it wasn't like we reinvented the wheel in the space of like 3 weeks. So it was just like, how on earth has this happened? Then we went to Saudi and finished second twice, and Pascal won, and it was like, we've literally got the best powertrain on the grid by miles. And then obviously Jaguar started to catch up, but it was such a bizarre start to the season after how Valencia went, and I was, yeah, obviously relishing in it massively and scoring good points. But yeah, honestly, after through Christmas and New Year, I was like, well, it's gonna be one of those next couple of years, we'll just drive around at the back and try and collect some points here and there.
How do you still not have a explanation as to where pre-season testing was so terrible?
Honestly, we have no idea.
So
we have no idea. Like, we, like, when we were driving the track in that test, like, the car did feel bad. Like, we were having really bad issues with braking, and like, it felt like we were 1 second off. But then it's not like we changed all that much going into Mexico, and then all of a sudden, like, our issues were sort of definitely reduced. They were still there, but I guess everyone else had their own issues. And evolved into our sort of favor. And but honestly, I think anyone who said like, oh, it was this what fixed it, it's like, no, like, I don't believe that. There were so many other things which were evolving throughout the year, which was a natural progression of everyone. But yeah, honestly, I've never seen a turnaround like it. It was going from literally the back to the very front by quite a way.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, Valencia testing really does tell you nothing. I mean, it's that year proved it, and it's hard again to see really what we've understood from Valencia testing this time around, apart from how to improve fire regulation slightly.
Yeah.
But how did it go for you? I mean, we're sort of jumping ahead a little bit, but looking ahead to season 10, can you take anything from Valencia testing?
I think small bits, to be honest. There's nothing crazy. I didn't drive all that much because our rookie drove in the morning session before the fire, and then the fire happened. So I didn't drive then. And then in the afternoon session, like 2 days later, my car wouldn't work. So then I didn't drive then. And then I just did one day at the end, really, and circulated. It was all right, to be fair. I think I finished like sixth. But we were a lot more competitive than what we were this time last year. But I find with Valencia, it's such... Everyone knows the track so well, and everyone's driving on such a limit, which you just don't drive at on real circuits, like, or street circuits, because you don't have these references, like, where you're talking, like, literally inches, and you're surrounded by walls, so the risk you take is so much less. Even though it feels like you're driving on the absolute limit, you're actually not. Whereas Valencia, you're really trying to eke out the last sort of 100th of the car, which is just never the case in Formula E normally, because you'd just be crashing all the time. So it's limited learning for sure, but nevertheless, you're in the car, you're circulating and getting more laps on the new software which you've developed through the winter, which we definitely have. So I'd say driving-wise, learning, it's negligible for us, but for the team and the way they operate the car and getting new people up to speed. You know, we've employed new people, and I'm sure a lot of other teams have. So it's getting them up to speed more than anything.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Going into this season as well, you've done multiple years in Formula E. How do you feel in yourself going in as a world champion? Do you feel any different, like even subconsciously at all? Is there any feeling of extra pressure or less pressure, or is it just business as usual?
No, definitely less pressure, to be honest. I feel like I've accomplished it now, and I'm not just going to have to like sit back and relax and do nothing, but I've just always came close in my first year, second year, like I delivered good results for the package we had, and then obviously last year we ended up winning the thing. But it's just now a bit more of a relief. I've won it, and I can just sort of I enjoy Formula anyway, but just enjoy it and even more, have like less pressure. I mean, when it comes to qualifying and the racing, the pressure will still be there, the nerves will still be there, but just walking around the paddock and having a bit of flair to yourself that, you know, you've done it and you don't feel like you need to prove anything to anyone, I would say, especially other teams, yourself, other drivers. You just have that respect among others, really.
You're going to strut into the paddock.
You can just chest picture. Out, shoulders yeah. back. Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Oh, here comes Dennis. Fireworks going off behind him.
I'll get all that range.
John Cena music.
So, rivals. You know, who are you looking at season 10? You're thinking, I've got to keep an eye on them. They're going to be a challenger.
I think, Jaguar in general. They looked incredibly strong towards the end of last year. You know, their performances were definitely better than ours. And thankfully, obviously, that incident in Rome helped me massively. But if it wasn't for that, like, their pace was definitely quicker than us. I think Jaguar are definitely the ones to beat. And I think even DS, Penske and Maserati, they... On days, they were incredibly fast. And, you know, Gunther basically dominated the whole of Jakarta. So I think when that thing's in the sweet spot, it's very, very quick. And I think, generally, yes, everyone will close the gap. But, definitely the people we need to beat will be Jaguar. Hopefully us and Porsche can work together and, try and take it to them, really. But it's going to be difficult for sure.
Work together, Pascal. Work together.
That's mate.
what about on the calendar this year, which circuit do you think gets the best version of Jake Dennis, the best racing driver is unlocked on which track?
I think Saudi. It's such a driver circuit and it generally plays into my favour. I've always performed there quite well and qualifying 12th there last year and then finishing second was just such an enjoyable race for myself. But and Rome for me, everyone, all the drivers love Rome, so I wouldn't be the only one saying that, but it unlocks extra from you. But it's just a shame that it's gone this year, or season 10. It's such a fun circuit to drive, the way the curbs are laid out, the bumps. So it's a bit of a shame to see that go, but I think Saudi is definitely my favourite and something which I really enjoy pushing the limits with, because it's quite high risk, but high reward if you get it right. Where some other circuits, like even if you go absolute ham and you try and find the extra tenth, like you probably gain next to nothing. Whereas Saudi, because it's so fast and so flowing through that middle sector, you can really gain like 4 or 5 tenths on someone who's only pushing, say, like 97%. Like the next to 3% unlocks so much potential.
I don't know whether this is a fair comparison or not, but obviously in Formula One, we see sometimes drivers losing like 3 or 4 kilos a race and you know, particularly in places like Qatar, really struggling inside the cockpit. Is it similar in Formula E? Do you get the same kind of thing happening, particularly in places like Jeddah or, you know, some of the hotter circuits?
Generally the biggest thing about Formula E, and literally all the drivers are pushing for it, is like there's no power steering in the cars. And mechanically, these cars, because of the tyres we run, in slow speed is actually really good. Like you have a lot of grip in slow speed corners. So physically, to turn the wheel is super difficult. And it also depends on what caster your team run, like the weight of the wheel. But it's more your arms, I would say. Your neck is absolutely fine. Like I'd be lying to you if we had like high G-forces in Formula E, we just don't. So the neck and generally your body is fine. It's just everything from your shoulder, like an arm and wrists, really take the beating. There's nothing we can do about it. But there's only certain circuits which are like that, I would say. Like London's probably the worst, in all fairness, even though you don't have the heat, just the track layout just allows no rest. London's probably the worst, and Rome, because we raced there in crazy conditions this year. It was like 70 degree track temp and like 40 degree air temp, so it was like a massive heat wave and super unpleasant. I definitely think Formula One have it worse. I'll find out in a week's time when I'm driving for F1, or soon see how hard it is and see if my neck ends up in a different postcode.
Yeah, because I mean, I know there is training for neck. We've all seen the photos of someone grasping some massive thing, almost kinky looking thing on the side of your head that's kind of pulling it. Surely there's nothing like actually getting behind the wheel, right? You've been behind that Red Bull a number of times, right?
Yeah, there's really not. Like, you try and train your neck as much as you possibly can, but honestly, nothing can prepare you for 180 miles per hour corner and 5 G's going through your neck. Like, no matter how much weight you put on your neck off the side of a bench, it ain't going to do shit. So it's just like, I'll train it, but I know after 5 laps, it's going to end up on that headrest resting. So it's just, your neck only is prepared if you do like a season in Formula One. Like the guys, even at the start of the year, like when they go to their pre-season testing and they've driven in Formula One for 5-6 years, like they rest their neck, and then it's only really towards the end of the season where, like, they can hold it, and then you're expected, like me, to just jump in and do a full day testing and just be like, yeah, train your neck and you'll be fine. It's like, no, it's going to be heavily planted on that headrest, and you just feel like a passenger. That's the worst thing. Like, you feel so hopeless, and just like, you try and hold your neck as much as you possibly can, and then it just like eventually just gives up and you just feel like, oh yeah, literally hopeless to yourself until we come back onto the straight, and then you can have like a 10 second rest.
Very exciting though, to have the opportunity to drive that Formula One car. Really, really cool. And it'll still be pretty hot out there, so yeah, will be challenging for you. But just going back to Formula E, how do you view the health of the championship generally? I mean, we've seen teams come and go, manufacturers come and go. It feels like it's in quite a good place at the moment, and obviously electric racing is booming and across the board with E1 and now Formula G coming in with Dealbag Gill. From inside the sport, how does it feel?
No, I generally feel like Formula E is in a good place right now. I think as drivers are trying to push for certain improvements, but nevertheless, I think globally it's growing more and more. We're trying to get it on better TV channels. We're trying to promote it to the public better, because I think that's something which we can improve on, I would say. But nevertheless, like, the racing is incredible. There's no doubting that. The level of drivers and the teams, the professionalism is very high. I just feel like now we need to push it into the bigger audience and, you know, try and land like a Netflix documentary on it. Like, all us drivers are generally quite good fun. We're quite lighthearted. We have a bit of banter between us, and I think it would like thrive off that. Obviously, it's not big enough to do that yet, but that's something what it needs for it to just like push through. You know, there's been so many documentaries which Netflix have sort of taken and made grow so much now. You know, like golf with the Full Swing, like that created my interest in golf. So it's just like, so many documentaries which are doing it now. You know, the one came out with that Tour de France with cycling, that was interesting. But nevertheless, I think it's in a good spot. I just think it needs the next bit now for it to push forward and grow again.
I really like the, I guess it's the equivalent to like the cool down room when you guys are watching the replays. Like, that's exactly what fans want to see. Because it's like the human discussion between, it's like after a, I don't know, iRacing lobby, and you're like chatting with somebody took you out. It's like, you got so unhinged. It's great. I love it, man. It's brilliant. That's what we want to see. That would be, that's prime. I think, if anything, a Drive to Survive-esque Formula E documentary, I think you guys would give more than the F1 drivers, because I think they are more media trained and pigeonholed.
Exactly, which,
you know, I haven't.
I haven't actually been in that driver's room since, where was season 8, the last race of the year. Like, I didn't go in it last year. I either finished on the podium or DNF'd in the wall. So I haven't been in it. I haven't been in it since like a year and a half. And it, like, I've forgotten what it's like. But I remember it being great, because the drivers would just rip into each other and like, give each other some stick. But yeah, I either finished on the podium or crashed last year. So,
All or nothing. No, I think that would be good fun. And there's some big characters in the sport, aren't there? I mean, you know, there's people like yourself, you wear your heart on your sleeve. You know, others like Dan Ticktum and Pascal. You know, there are characters there that could really cause some controversy.
It would be
a good watch. Andretti as a team, what's the vibe like in the team? How would you describe the culture there? And are you looking forward to working alongside Norman?
Yeah, Norma's a good guy. He's a good lad, to be fair. So him coming in, he's a happy-go-lucky guy, and he's very French, but doesn't bring like that French sort of behaviour in. Like, he also has like a really good laugh. So he just probably brings the French accent more than anything, which is just funny. But the team are all English in terms of like there's only like a couple of Americans. So all the guys are based in Banbury, and a lot of the team are from the team I used to race for in Arden in 2016, which I was speaking about earlier. A lot of the mechanics and engineers are from there. And my engineer, I brought him over from Aston Martin in my GT side. So yeah, we're all this like one big sort of bubble and family, to be fair, have massive banter. Like, we're definitely the team which probably has the most fun, I would say. And that's super important for me. Like, I don't want a team which is just so strict and very like I said, by the book. It's important to have that banter and flow between the mechanics, engineers, the truckies, the coordinators, the team manager. So it's something which I really try and push on and try and get everyone out of their shells as much as possible, because I just think it brings the best out of everyone.
Are you often up Banbury? Because it's what, hour and a half, 2 hours from London, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's about, so normally not. Like, last year I didn't go once because all our simulator work was based in Stuttgart, which is quite a boring place. And then, whereas now we've got our own simulator, so it's based up in Banbury, and we're just trying to develop it as quickly as possible right now, ready for the season. So I'm there a lot more. So I'm trying to get in there once a week right now and just trying to develop the sim as much as possible, because they need to go away and then improve on the ideas which I've said, and then go back next week and improve it. Norman's in actually today and tomorrow. Fine-tuning the time model. So, it's a constant progress with that, and it will just keep evolving throughout the season as well. But very much looking forward to driving up to Banbury instead of catching a flight, and going to Stuttgart. So it's much easier. Two more nights at home, which is good compared to, leaving Sunday for the race week, 2 days sim, and then flying directly to the race. Now I can sort of see my race weekend starting Wednesday, which is nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we're going to move on to our final three questions now. So we ask these same questions to everybody on the show. So these have been through like 180 odd episodes. Although the second question, this will only be the second time we've asked it. It's a brand new question, but these always throw up different answers. I'll kick off first. So now this could be anything. It doesn't need to be motorsport related. It could be something completely random. But what's got you excited at this very moment?
Oh, easy. Golf.
Oh,
mate, I am hooked.
Did you watch the Netflix Cup last night, by the way?
I have watched it, but that just got me into it a little bit. And then I went to the Topgolf with my friends, and I was like, this is good fun. I was so bad, but I was like, this is a good laugh. And then I sort of just got hooked, started getting lessons. And now I'm just smashing it like five times a week.
Oh, wow.
My first, nine holes Saturday with one of my mates. And just looking forward to it. The reason behind why it all started is through the winter, I bought a place out in Marbella, which is surrounded by golf courses. And I was like, I need to exploit this situation I'm in terms of, Marbella's known for golfing. I was like, I can't rock up there and just shank it massively. So I was like, I need to learn. So the next sort of 4 or 5 months, I'm going to try and learn as much as possible. And so now I've got putting mats everywhere. I've got chipping nets in my house. The missus is not happy about it.
I was about to say, I bet that went down well.
yeah. She's like, what is this? And I was like, well, it's a green mat. Like, of course it is.
Have you got yourself a handicap yet?
No, because I've never even been on a course.
Right.
So, I'm going to find out how good I am. Obviously, this Saturday against my mate. He's no good, but we'll be able to get by. It's just the drivers, man. The drivers for me, like, they're either eating miles or they go left, right.
It's so frustrating. My driver was bought for me by Max Chilton when I used to manage him. Right, I did him a wicked sponsorship deal. There was I thinking I was going to get a nice payday. He bought me a bloody golf club. But anyway, he bought me this golf club, and it straightens your swing. So it removes the slice and the hook. I mean, not really? Completely, but it really straightens you up. I'll send you a picture of it, but it's quite old now, but it's a bloody good club. And immediately I knocked 10 shots off my game. Just by hitting this with this driver. Yeah, it's a freaky thing.
I doubt that's PGA approved, Tim.
No, but it's the equipment.
The one which fires itself where you swing. You've got one of them, haven't you?
That's what it is. For every single shot. Suddenly I'm going around in 70.
I was literally at the range yesterday. I don't hit anything longer than a 5-iron because I just can't. With any consistency, I'd rather play a little bit shorter and actually not shag it into the trees every time.
Yeah,
it's driver, 7-iron, pitching wedge, putt, every hole.
So you need
my bag is very lean. very good golf. We've never had that before. That's a good one, right, Tom? Over to you. This is our new question, Tom.
Okay, you've given me the new exciting question, Tim. All right. Jake, what's one lesson your job has taught you that you think everyone should learn at some point in their life?
I would say, and I got taught it by someone, actually, to be fair, but it was my teammate in 2015, Felix Rosenquist. He was so like happy-go-lucky and just didn't like force his job at all and was very much enjoying the moment he was in enjoying the life we live, because it is a pretty cool life. You know, we obviously race cars for a living, and I was very much by that book guy, like just doing like data after data after data, numbers after numbers, and I was drilling myself into the ground. Whereas now I'm like sort of the complete opposite. I very much just drive off instinct and try and enjoy what you're doing, and then you generally perform so much better, whether it's no matter what it is, really. And so I think if you're not enjoying it, get out of it. And then, just try and be in the moment as much as possible. So, enjoy what you do, I would say.
Yeah, very good. What do we think of that question, Tom? You like that one?
I like it. Good answer as well. Everyone deserves to be happy in their career, whatever it is in life.
Absolutely, absolutely. Final one for you. What are you scared of?
Oh, snakes.
Oh.
Absolutely. Spy snakes. Spiders are pretty close behind, but for me, snakes are the absolute worst in terms of being near them. When I was in Australia doing a race out in Bathurst, my teammates had some moments with me there, like when we were out in the woods and stuff, like in the Blue Mountains, like it was there's nothing good about them. There's nothing good.
No redeeming features.
So snakes, absolute despise them, hate them, can't stand them. But I was that kid when I was younger, when you used to go to like on a Cornwall and stuff, and they used to wrap around snakes around you. We used to go to Newquay and stuff. I was always that guy, and then I just got older. I was like, why on earth would I ever do that now?
snakes are not fun.
I don't want to scare you too. I literally saw a clip yesterday. I think it was from a course in Australia. It was a golf course. And there's this like python, like, you know, standing up when like the front of it, and it's like going like that towards the golfers, and they're like running. Well, they're not running away. The camera op, because the camera op never gets hurt. That's the rule.
At least you got you could take a swing at it. You got a weapon.
True. You would have a weapon. Yeah. That is true.
Mm. You are weaponized on the golf course.
I'd miss the snake.
Damn it. He's got through. Jake, thank you so much for joining us. It's been lots of fun chatting to you. I think everyone was really pleased to see you do so well last year, and it was a really exciting finish to the end of the season. Season 10 fast approaching in January. All the best for it. Hopefully we'll see you at one of the races, but it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Speak soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter @Motormouth_, Instagram @Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.